you know, I actually had a light bulb moment now. Because I was like, Android things, I was like going to go on my usual rant where, like, you know, I blame Google for terrible naming. And I'm like, why would they ever call it Android things? I mean, that makes no sense. It's like so common. Like, as I was asking that question. And then when like Don asked, like, oh, can you tell us more about the Internet of Things? I was like, oh, that's why. Like, cha-ching.
Makes sense.
From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show.
Before we begin today's show, I want to take a quick moment and thank our sponsor. I'm really excited because this sponsor is actually a new one and they're called Cobiton. Cobiton is a new mobile testing platform that gives you online access to all the mobile devices that you need whenever you need them. So think of Cobiton as your personal device lab in the cloud. You can manage and access all the devices that you need. And the really cool thing is you can test both your internal and external devices. So if your company has Cobiton set up, and you have a couple of devices already lying around, then you can hook that up and those also show up in your interface. So you can sort of share this across your company. It's a really cool solution. You know how you always have those six devices and the ones that your users constantly use and you always have to keep testing on? Well, you can save up on that money and you don't have to buy any more of those devices because they're probably available on Cobiton. You can test devices manually. So they have this cool interface, sort of like an emulator, or you can run automated scripts, which is perfect as developers. It's super simple to also just sign up and start testing. So if you want to take it for a spin and see if this works out for you, it's perfect. You can download and install it in just two easy steps. So head on to the link cobiton.com/fragmented. That's K-O-B-I-T-O-N, Cobiton. And you get a 15-day free trial. So if you want to see if this would work out for you or if your company would actually find it useful, then it's perfect. Head on there and they'll know you came from us. Thanks again to Cobiton for sponsoring today's show. This is a really cool sponsor and we're excited to have them on.
In this episode of Fragmented, Kaushik and I talked to Rebecca Franks about Android Things. I don't know about you, but I find it pretty fun to play with new different types of devices like Raspberry Pis and different types of Internet of Things devices, and Android Things makes it a lot easier for you to get connected and start developing in an Android environment which you're already super familiar with, being that you're most likely an Android developer. This episode is going to be really interesting because we talk about a whole different bunch of things related to Android Things, building the applications, and just the entire ecosystem as a whole. We hope you enjoy. So Kaushik, I got this new kind of hobby that I'm working on at home, and it's not really new. It's, a lot of people do it, but it's working with like Raspberry Pi devices. Have you done anything like that?
Ooh, nice. So at my time in college, I did work a little with it, but I mean, to be quite honest, I've been curious, but I haven't actually spent any time on it. I've always wondered like how to like get started with that stuff.
It's pretty fun. I actually just kind of do some really super simple stuff. I have a monitor set up right now that displays some analytics from a couple of my websites. But it's nice. It just kind of cycles through. I'm going to have it mounted to the back of the monitor and it's mounted on the wall. And it's like I get this little dashboard there that's kind of running. That's probably not, I could do a lot more with it. But in any case, it's a pretty cool thing.
It would be nice if we could actually learn a little more about this in some detail. Wouldn't you say so?
I would have to agree, especially since there is all kinds of new talk of this coming out lately with something known as Android Things.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you agree that that would be something good to talk about?
That would be amazing. And we have someone who is actually pretty good at this stuff and has been like pushing out some content in this area that I think is pretty rad. So without further ado, let's welcome Rebecca. Welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here. Virtually.
Definitely. Rebecca, for folks that don't know who you are or any of the background about you, would you mind giving us a little rundown about your history, kind of what you do now, and et cetera?
Okay, so I'm based in Johannesburg, South Africa, sunny South Africa, as I like to call it. I'm an Android engineering lead at a company called DVT, where I do custom software solutions for different clients. And more recently, or at least last year, I became a Google Developer Expert for Android.
Oh, cool.
And now I'm starting a little bit more with Android Things and getting a lot more into it myself.
That's awesome. And I remember, like, Rebecca, we met last I.O., right?
Yeah, very briefly.
And I managed to get, like, a quick snippet. So for folks who are interested, you can listen to episode 42, I believe. That's the first part of our Google I.O. So you can listen to, like, what Rebecca had to say then. Today, I guess, what we're really interested in talking about is Android Things. So could you give us, like, a rundown on what exactly Android Things is? Like, you know, because I've been, like, reading your articles and I've been seeing a lot of this pop up online, but I haven't, like, truly understood what it is. So could you, like, give us, like, a rundown for folks who have never heard about Android Things? Because it's a pretty common term, like Android Things, you know?
So it's Google's latest operating system, and it's designed for the Internet of Things. And you can build basically how you would normally build Android apps. You would build Android Things apps. So typically to control sort of LEDs or maybe some cameras that are doing some image processing. Mm-hmm. And basically this is Google's way of trying to break into the IoT market.
So what is that exactly, before we go any further, what's IoT mean?
So that means Internet of Things, which is quite, I guess, quite a generic term. it encompasses a lot of things. So IoT is basically any objects that you sort of connect to the internet. So be it your smart bulbs, your Google Home is classified as an internet of, or a thing of the internet, I guess you would call it.
Thing of the internet. Oh my God, I love that. My Google Home is a thing of the internet.
That's basically what it is. It's all these devices that are now connected to the internet and that can sort of perform extra functions that your normal little light bulbs or whatever wouldn't do for you.
You know, I actually had a light bulb moment now, because I was like, Android Things, I was like going to go on my usual rant where, like, you know, I blame Google for terrible naming. And I'm like, why would they ever call it Android Things? I mean, that makes no sense. It's like so common, like as I was asking you that question. And then when, like, Don asked, like, oh, can you tell us more about the Internet of Things? I was like, oh, that's why. Like, cha-ching.
Makes sense.
So typically with, like, Android Things, right, and the Internet of Things, as Don alluded to at the beginning of the show, there's, like, talk about these IoT boards. There's a spectrum of devices, if you think about it, right? Because there's, like, the Raspberry Pi. There's, like, these small, like, circuit boards that, like, you know, we can tinker around with. And then obviously there's, like, more sophisticated stuff, which, as that comes in with, like, the smart home kind of things, right? Like Google Home, for example, or, like, you know, the smart light bulbs. So can you, like, give us, like, where each of these lie in the spectrum? Can I control all of these with Android Things? Is there, like, something specific that Android Things is, like, aimed at? Like, give us a rundown there.
So basically what you would do is start with one of the developer kits. So you can run it on a Raspberry Pi 3B. An Intel Edison also runs Android Things. And when you're developing, you would use one of these boards. But as soon as you want to actually start taking your product to market, that's when you would go and get, like, a custom hardware design using the Google support package on top of it, and then design the hardware for what you actually need. So for instance, a Raspberry Pi might have a couple of extra ports in that you don't need or don't make use of. So when you would want to take this hardware or this Internet of Thing, or this thing of the internet, let's call it that. When you would want to take that to production, you would typically go and scale down the board into exactly what you need for the use case. So if you wanted to make your own replica of the Google Home, you could do that and just make it into, obviously, how it looks, like copy the exact look of it and just embed a smaller board inside it, if that makes sense.
So I'm kind of even confused right now. So I'm used to working with Android on, like, a phone or a tablet or something like this, but we're talking about Raspberry Pi 3, which I'm familiar with, which is a, you know, it's a board, it's a computer, and I can put, like, an operating system on it and do stuff on it. So is Android Things, like, this new operating system that I can put on the Raspberry Pi that is Android, or how does this tie together?
Yes. So you would basically flash the same SD card that you would normally put, like, a Raspbian or something on for your Raspberry Pi, and you would flash the Android Things image onto the SD card, and then that runs as itself on the board. So when you boot up the Pi, it boots into an Android operating system. It's a very slimmed down version though, so it doesn't have like all the system UI, like your notification bar and your little, what's that bar at the bottom? I don't know, with all the...
TouchWiz?
How dare you, sir? You know how riled up I get with that.
So the navigation menu down at the bottom, do you get that at all?
No. So you don't get that on the running on the Android Things device, and you don't get the notification bar at the top.
Oh, the system bar, right now. Yeah
system bar, that one.
Okay, so it is Android that you actually get to work with, though. Okay, so that's pretty cool.
And can we, like, for folks like who haven't worked intricately with a lot of like these boards, right? So what are the different, like, the Raspberry Pi is like super common, right? Like that's one thing I'm pretty sure most people have heard about. Are there any other boards that you have like tinkered around with? Are there any Android Things recommended boards as such? Like, because when I want to try this, I want to get to like actually like building something quickly, right? I don't want to like install drivers or like wonder about all those things. Like, what's the easiest route for me? Like, you know, can you have, what devices have you worked with?
So I have the NXP Pico and the Raspberry Pi. If you go into the IoT Android Things website, you'll see all the list of supported platforms there. But for me, the easiest has been so far the Raspberry Pi, and that just involved flashing the SD card with Android Things. So I think if you buy the Raspberry Pi through Adafruit or something like that on online, you might get Android Things pre-installed on there, but I don't think so because it is still in dev preview, so you might still need to do that yourself.
That's true. And that's an important point. Like right now, it hasn't like gone released worldwide yet, right? So in all likelihood, during this I/O, I guess we'd probably hear more about it, right?
Yeah, I would expect there's going to be a lot more announcements there and maybe more, some cool demos, hopefully.
Got it. Yeah. That sounds very Google-like to do. I do remember, I'm not sure if you remember, like Google Brillo, right? Like this was the thing that originally it came out. Like that's what they called it before. So is this like sort of a rebranding of that, or is it a little different in some way? Do you know?
From what I understand, I haven't really worked with Brillo, but I think it is just a rebranded. So Brillo was developing with, I think, C++. And now it's been sort of, I think they've sort of canned that project and now they're focusing on Android Things where you do just develop in Java.
This is so easy, like a target, but I'm going to try very hard to stay away from it.
Let it go. But,
it's like C++. I wonder if that's why they had to never mind. Okay.
Let it flow through you.
Interestingly, C++ is supported. You can do native development now with the latest dev preview of Android Things.
Oh.
You can do C++ if you really want to.
Interesting. I wonder if that's because of like, you know, like a performance kind of gain that is there. But I mean, if you can run Java, then I imagine there's like a garbage collector or something that's running anyway, right?
Yeah.
So, oh, well.
Well, yeah, that's a good question. So if this is Android, that means that I can write Java applications for Android Things. Is that a correct assumption?
Yes, that's totally the best part about it that I at least find. So I'm not a big fan of C++ or...
You wouldn't say.
...many other... but with Android Things, you can use all the tools that you love about Android and use them on the Android Things platform. So all the Google Cloud Platform SDKs, the Firebase libraries you can use, Kotlin, RxJava, all of that you can use because it's just a normal Android app that you're building.
Dang, that is like, that I guess is the power, right? Like, you know,
and
we've talked like in previous episodes, we have talked about like VR and other stuff, and like it is kind of like beautiful in some ways that we can just use this one language, right? Obviously, some of us would prefer it wasn't like Java, it was some other language. But I mean, even like given all that, like, you know, it is pretty awesome that we can just like use this one language and somehow morph that into like different forms, right?
Yeah.
So let's dive a little bit deeper in here. And I guess the first thing that I think about when I'm thinking about Android Things in particular and IoT is, I think 2 years ago, I think 2010 or 11 is the first time I really saw like an Arduino up and, you know, up, and I held it in my hands and I was like, okay, this is like this little circuit board thing. And everyone was really hyped up about it. And like, look, I can turn on this LED. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. Like, okay. Like, I just didn't, it didn't find the allure to me. Like, okay, you can turn on an LED. Like, I can turn on a light switch. Check it out.
As so, people are sending spacecrafts.
Yeah,
as NASA's
exactly.
sending spacecrafts. Like, I got this LED to work. I can conquer the world.
That's how I felt. And then, you know, I see these like little things that have like all like, you know, it's like a little rectangle. It has all these holes in it. And these wires are going in and out of them, and they got all these, you know, and LEDs and resistors and these switches that they're putting on there. And it's like, okay, I don't have any idea. I know what these things kind of are, but that makes me think of, you know, if we're talking about Android things, you wrote a great post on the hardware basics. And I wonder if we could cover like do like some type of crash course on some of these topics, like breadboards. Like maybe we could start there. Like what are breadboards, and for those that are listening who have never seen a breadboard, if you could explain to them maybe why you'd want to use one, how you would use one with Android things, you know, what maybe what purpose they carry in the world of IoT.
Okay, so a bread. So when actually, interestingly, before we get into this, I also didn't know all this stuff when I started. So it's not to say nobody can learn, because I learned, right? But anyways. So a breadboard is basically where you would start your prototyping for your electronics connections and circuits that you want to build. So if, for instance, you have an idea that you want to have three buttons that control a camera, or that control LEDs, or you have a little LCD screen, your breadboard is where you would start to plug things in and connect and create your circuits. It wouldn't be used when you want to go to production, because this is just typically for prototyping. And when you want to go to production, then you would need to start soldering things together, which gets a little bit more permanent. So the breadboard allows you to plug components in and out and prototype your ideas.
So the breadboard is basically like this little like pluggable circuit board that you can kind of just connect things together, from what I could tell, right?
Yep, that's exactly it.
It's like wireframing for circuits, right? Like if you, instead of like drawing it out, you can just like use this thing. Like, you know, it's like a physical wireframing thing.
So you the wires that jump it together, I believe those are called jumper wires that pop everything together. And then we have things known as like resistors. And then we start getting to like some electrical engineering topics here. At what point does someone need to worry about resistors or anything like that?
So this is typically when your electronic components won't allow a certain amount of voltage through them. Mm-hmm. Okay, so disclaimer, I'm not an electrical engineer, so this is just my understanding of it.
Well, we're all experts.
If I get, something wrong. So a resistor basically allows you to resist the electrical flow through your circuit. So if, for instance, you have a voltage of 5 volts that's going through your circuit, and your LED that you've got can only support a certain amount, you would use a resistor in order to reduce the flow into your LED, as so not to pop it, so you don't like damage any of your components.
Oh, okay,
that makes sense. So, if I understand this right, like I guess there are like certain things, and this again, like what makes it a little tricky is like it would depend on like the actual component, right? So if you have like an LED. And like you send like a fire hose of like, you know, amperage or like electricity through the thing, it'll probably blow the thing, as you said, right? So the resistors is to sort of control or sort of like throttle like the flow of the electricity, right? Where does the electricity come from? Because like I'm thinking I'm like a complete klutz and I don't want to like electrocute myself, right? So like is there like anything, like how much is this kg proof?
This kg proof.
I think so. So I've plugged in things and haven't broken anything too badly yet.
Okay.
I haven't electrocuted myself, and I haven't had any trips to the hospital. So that's always good news.
That's comforting. So okay. That means I can like try this out now. Like now I'm opening my mind to this. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it obviously depends on how expensive your components are and if you're really worried about damaging them or not. But typically, if you are going to plug something in, you would want to maybe just read up a little bit about how much voltage it can take, I think is the correct terminology, and then start to calculate the resistor that you would need to use.
Got it. And but where does the power come from? I'm curious, like, you know, do you connect this to like a wire socket on your wall? Do you connect it to your computer? Do you have like a battery pack? Where does the power get drawn from?
So what I've done, I'm sure there are other ways you can probably connect batteries in that, but basically the Raspberry Pi is connected to normal electricity from your wall.
Oh boy.
And then on the Pi itself, this is getting really basic. Hopefully it's enough. And then on the Pi itself, you get different pins that represent different things. So some of the pins have 3 volts out, some of them have 5 volts out. Mm-hmm. And from then you can just use your jumper wires to put power into your little breadboard. And then from there is where the power will come from on your breadboard.
That makes sense. And I mean, in all seriousness, folks, like jokes aside, please read the manual on this one. Anytime you're playing with electricity, you know, just, yeah, be safe.
Yeah.
All right. So like you talked about these hardware things and all this is like starting to make some sense to me. Did you have to do any of this when you built like a basic sort of like working proof of concept? Like, did you have to worry about this stuff or did you just like plug things in and then like, I'll just like give it a run and then see what happens?
So I actually followed a really good book that I've found that came with an Arduino kit. It was like a hardware basics. And at the same time, it sort of teaches you how to plug your circuits in and how to build it with Arduino.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did from there was just sort of adapted those concepts to use it with the Raspberry Pi and with Android Things. So for that book really helped me learn and understand like the different concepts.
Got it.
And from there, then I've just started like looking at, for instance, the Android Things GitHub repo. And there they give like a really nice, they call them, I think, Fritzing diagrams. I don't know if I'm saying that right. But basically, it's like a top head view of exactly what's going on and how you should plug what wires into where on your breadboard. So it's pretty foolproof if you're doing like the really basic stuff. So you can probably just follow those and make sure you get the right resistors. And there's a lot of tutorials online that'll show you like what to plug in where. But I do think it's a good idea to understand exactly where and why where the electricity is going and why it is working and why it's not.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And we'll add a link to like all the resources that Rebecca just mentioned. And also like to get a better rundown on like the hardware basics, like your the post that you wrote on your blog is like pretty good. It's like, you know, it gives you like just the right amount for you to like get started and, you know, get pretty hands-on. You did mention like the Android stuff, right? So let's like maybe, because in the end, we're all Android developers, right? And that's obviously the thing that interests us about this, right? How similar is this to like actual Android mobile development, right? Is it like similar in just the Java language or is it actually like more similar? You know, like as an Android developer, do I have to learn anything? Because the hardware stuff is something obviously I'll have to pick up. Beyond that, yeah. Is there anything else that I'll have to like learn? Like how easily can I get into this?
Yeah, are we still using like activities and fragments or are we using a different paradigm or what?
So it is pretty similar. The only thing is that the Android Things operating system has got a little bit less things that are available to you. So like I mentioned before, you don't have the ability to send push notifications and anything that generally like requires a user interface, you should sort of, you can sort of write that off as not being available. This is probably a very general statement to make, but basically with Android Things, your displays are optional. So when you plug in your device, it might not have a display. So when you're building your apps, you are building with activities. So your normal Android activities that you're used to, that's where you build your main interactions with a sort of user interface. And I say that with like inverted commas because your user interface might be physical buttons and like visible LEDs that you've plugged into your circuit. So you would use your normal activities. And you can still use anything else that you sort of used to, like services, intent services, and obviously all the other Android libraries that you used to.
Oh, that's pretty cool. But wait, so you say activities, which means then, like, is it actually like a life cycle? Like, do you use the exact life cycle calls that we're like used to and we love so dearly?
So I haven't really dived into exactly the differences, but from what I've seen, and this is an observation, is that because typically when you make an Android Things app, it's going to be the only thing running on this device, your app will take it'll just run sort of the onCreate method, and only when you manually the app crashes or something like that would you get sort of other lifecycle callbacks. So you wouldn't really get into the on pause and on resume happening a lot, with normal Android apps, you're switching between apps. Mm-hmm. But you can install multiple apps on the device, and have that sort of interaction. So it is up to you how you sort of develop it. But your app is sort of the main thing that will be running on this device.
Interesting, interesting. And do you know if even Fragments are available? Do you use Fragments? I honestly genuinely ask.
Love Fragments.
I haven't tried Fragments, but I believe they are supported. You can just build your normal UI. So if you do have an attached display, some might be plugged into a TV or something like that, you can still build a normal Android UI like you would normally build your normal apps. So I would assume that Fragments are available, but I haven't tested this hypothesis.
Now, you did say that anything that requires basic user interface input is something that you can consider gone, which makes me wonder... I know that I can use sensors with some of these IoT boards to detect, movement, sound, temperature, humidity, stuff like that. But what if I do want to provide input? Do I need to use some type of tactile switches that from, the IoT world to enable those types of those things where I can provide user feedback or any type of interface? Is it supposed to be a hardware-based interface that I have to actually manually build, or do you know?
So you can plug in a normal HDMI you can plug in any HDMI supported device, so your TVs or whatever, and you will get the normal Android app experience that you have, but your app will take up the full display, if that makes sense. So the fact that I said you can forget about displays is actually probably incorrect in that only if you want to support that, you can have it. I mean, it's totally up to you what you want to support. So if your app just wants to have physical buttons, you can do that without having the display. But if you just want the display, you can also do that.
Okay. All right.
Interesting. Interesting.
So let's take this a step further. Let's say we've written some code that does something, could, flash a light, could read from a sensor. Am I building an APK? And if I am, how do I get that onto the device? How do I get that onto the Android Things device? And how does it run?
Okay. So you would just use Android Studio like you would with a normal app, and you create a normal Android app project. And the only difference now is that what you would do is add a provided dependency in your Gradle file for the Android Things framework. Mm-hmm. And then within your manifest, your Android manifest, you would specify that you're using the Internet of Things or the Android Things libraries within your manifest. And then you can connect to your Raspberry Pi the same way you connect to other Android devices. So you can do an ADB connect over Ethernet, and then you can just deploy it like you would deploy a normal Android app.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. So this is exactly the same exact stuff. I don't have to dabble in assembly language or some low-level language here. This is just, hey, write an Android app, but just change two or three lines and boom, you have this stuff.
Yeah.
That is pretty cool. Out of curiosity, do you know if it's very similar with other IoT platforms? Or, have you looked into that?
So I've played around a bit with the Arduino stuff, and the IDE was a little bit, not as rich in its support. So Android Studio is obviously really awesome. And the fact that you can use this with Android Things, I guess, makes this a really cool platform to develop for. But the Arduino stuff for me wasn't as nice. I mean, you can also just push and deploy to it. But the debugger and that, I just didn't find as easy to use as obviously the Android Studio stuff.
Right. That, I guess that makes sense. That's what makes it additionally compelling for us, right? The fact that we are in very comfortable sort of environments. A quick question. I'm just curious. I'm thinking now, I have this button that's connected to my breadboard and I have an LED connected, right? How are the inputs for your button? Is there a special library that's added where you have where it's like, oh, you know, Raspberry Pi button, like, dot connect or, like, you know, or detect if it's, like, on or off. Like, how does that work? Like, if I had to write this in actual code, what would it look like?
So there's actually three different ways in which you can access this kind of information. So for the really hardcore people, you can get access to the low-level peripheral I/O, so things such as your GPIO, so your general purpose input output protocol, all the different protocols that are normally supported, so pulse width modulation protocols, and there's a whole bunch more that are really advanced, and I'm not an expert in those, but basically you get like access to those protocols if you want to have raw access to these things. So for instance, with a button, you can just use the GPIO protocol and sort of register yourself to receive events when this this value on this pin has changed. So you can do it in that way, which is pretty low level. But then on top of it, you can also build, so if you are a hardware manufacturer or you're releasing a sort of a, like a, maybe you made a GPS module or you have one that doesn't have a driver or something like that, you can make your own custom user driver. So what this will do is other developers can import this user driver and get sort of events in the normal Android system, operating system. So for instance, like a GPS, you could tie quite easily into the normal GPS callbacks that you would normally get from a Android phone that has a GPS built in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So if I have a button, I can also set that up to receive normal key up and key down events if I wanted to. And on top of that, so that's if you want to build your own sort of driver. But there's a really, really awesome GitHub repo on the Android Things organization where there's a whole bunch of driver libraries that are already available for you. So this is gold.
Okay.
This is where you go when you don't have much information or you don't know how to develop sort of basic or interact with the protocols yourself. So over here, you'll be able to find like a button Gradle dependency or a LED Gradle dependency. And these you can just sort of add into your app. So you would just say, Gradle, compile, whatever, add the library there. And then within your app, you can just get access to like a button object. And then you can register callbacks and receive button events that have happened. So that's probably like the easiest approach is to go and use the peripheral driver library that's available on GitHub.
Oh, that's pretty slick. That's exactly what I want. I don't want to be writing my own drivers. What am I using, Linux?
No.
Okay, this sounds pretty cool. We'll make sure to add like a link in the show notes to that as well.
I feel that sometimes the easiest way for myself, and I think Kaushik agrees with me here, is the easiest way to learn is just to do it and kind of get your hands dirty.
Absolutely.
And to be 100% honest, one of the posts that I was turned on to recently that really caught my eye was one that you had written regarding an application that you had wrote that actually monitored electricity. So I was wondering, you know, it seems like you have a few use cases in which you've actually used Android Things. Would you mind walking us through maybe a couple of use cases in which you've actually used it?
Okay. So I can start with the electricity monitoring one first.
Mm-hmm.
So this is probably the most useful thing I've ever built in my life.
every software engineer when they actually build the first hardware thing, right? Like, oh my God, I made something in the real
so
world.
So useful. Yeah, so we've been battling quite a bit with electricity. And so the power goes off for quite a while and I don't know when it went off and there's no way for me to track how long it's been off for. And I don't know when it's come back on. So I could be at work and the power could have gone off and I get back home and I don't know how long it's gone off for or if it's come back on. So, what I've done is I've used, Android Things and this is currently running in my house right now, which is quite exciting. So what it does is basically my Pi is plugged into power. And on the Pi itself, I'm running Firebase with it. So I'm using the Firebase real-time database on the Pi. And Firebase has this really, really awesome callback on the real-time database, which is called the on-disconnect callback. And basically what this does is it sets up on the server, the Firebase real-time database server, to say, when this client disconnects, you need to do certain things on the server. So in my case, I'm setting the Pi to be sort of offline, and I'm setting a timestamp. So you would set the server timestamp, and what happens then is, so as soon as my power goes off, my Raspberry Pi will obviously power off, and then the Firebase real-time database will automatically update to say, okay, power's off, and it went off at this time. And more recently,
nice.
More recently now, I've added the support for notifications. So using the new Firebase Cloud Functions, or Cloud Functions for Firebase, let me say it that way, I get now notifications when my power goes on and when it goes on and when it goes off. So this is really awesome. So I don't have to go back and check in the app and see, okay, my power's off or my power's on. It'll automatically just send me notifications when that happens.
So it sends it to your phone, right?
Yes. So I've got a companion app that's running on the phone that's connected as well to this real-time database, and that knows exactly how long the power's been off for. And this app is running on my phone, and this thing will then receive notifications when my power goes off or when it comes back on.
That is awesome.
Yeah, that is like really cool. So step one was basically you would keep opening the app to see like, hey, is my power on? And you'll have like maybe like an indicator.
Exactly.
But what you said now is essentially with the Firebase like functionality that they added, where like you can send notifications directly from the cloud anytime an event happens, you're saying your app now, you don't even need to open the app because you've written like notification handlers for this very much Android-y app that you have on your phone, and that receives the notifications, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So it's almost like these two independent parts of like the solution, where like the first part is like the whole Android Things solution, where it actually like uses real electricity to like figure out like what's happening, and the other to like consume that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of use cases for this type of situation, especially for places that have, you know, power problems. And, you know, I live in the U.S. where we have, you know, pretty solid power, but I do live in a rural environment of New Jersey where it's actually quite common for us to lose power. And a lot of folks out here have automatic generators that just kick on. Like, I don't have one of those, but I could easily see how you could kind of rig up something, you know, if you have an extra cell phone line around that has some type of connectivity maybe that could do something just like this. When it, you know, flips off, you could automatically fire up your generator and, you know, flip the switch. I mean, it's going to be a little more involved, but there's so many applications of this type of technology. It's pretty witty.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it.
This is like really cool. I remember when I stayed in, like when I used to live in India, essentially they would have like regulated cuts, like, you know, just to make sure that we conserve electricity at times where like electricity was like a shortage. And like, you know, you would have like these regular cuts, and like sometimes some of these places don't. So like, if you want to hang around in like a coffee shop for a little longer, you know, or like, you know, stay at work a little longer just because like, you know, you have power in those places, I can see like your exact app being super useful, you know, at that point. I was like, oh, okay, power's back on, time to head home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be a cool part.
That is super cool. And yeah, okay. So this, I'm a little curious though. So a large part of what enabled this is like the Firebase part of like the powering down thing, right?
Yeah, that when I put the two and two together, then I realized, okay, I can use Firebase to do this, solve this problem, which was pretty easy to do actually.
Nice, nice, nice. I wonder how easy or difficult it would be to like sort of emulate that. You know, I imagine it should be possible, but yeah, I'm just curious to like see, because anytime you deal with like actual like electricity and power, like it's always like, I'm always curious to see how the events are triggered, right? Because it's getting to the metal, so to speak.
Yeah, I guess you can always just turn your power on and off yourself. Testing, user testing.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. The other use case that you wrote about, and this one seems like super complicated and also really cool, and so I'd like you to like tell us a little about it. This is basically where you've built like a distributed piano, right? So can you tell us what this is, and like, oh my god, like this sounds like super complicated, like how did you wire this up?
Okay, so this one is not as complicated as it sounds, and probably not as useful as the electricity monitoring one. But yeah, so this one is basically, I have a Raspberry Pi that has connected to a little piezo speaker. So that is plugged into my breadboard. And from this point on, I have a companion app that's running on a multitude of phones. So you can connect as many as you want. And basically, all these phones are on the same Wi-Fi network. So And on these phones, I've got a little keyboard view that I got from some open source thing on GitHub. And this this piano, basically when you press a key, it sends a message via Google Nearby Messages API to the Pi itself. And the Pi just then translates that into a frequency to play on the Piezo. So with the Google Nearby Messaging API, it's pretty easy. As long as all your devices are on the same network, you can quite easily send messages to other devices and receive messages back and forth. So that was what this blog post and this use case was sort of highlighting, was that how you can use these available APIs already to maybe make something fun, or just that they're available on Android things as well.
Wow. And I guess like the objective with all of this is to sort of like open our minds as to like what the applications could be, right? Like, and that's like what makes this pretty like slick. Just to step back though, so like I did study mechanical engineering, so I understand what you mean, but I want to like make sure like everyone is like on the same page. So you said like piezo speakers, right? Or like piezo speakers. I'm like, maybe my pronunciation is off here, but
maybe
can you tell us
is.
What that it has to do with pressure, right? Like it's a property where like if you press something or you apply pressure, essentially it conducts electricity or passes electricity through, right?
I'm not entirely sure, but that sounds right. So all the sort of understanding that I have is that you you would use the pulse width modulation protocol, which allows you to vary your signal between 0 and 1. So not just a solid 1 or 0 value that you send to it, but you can send a variable value like 0. Whatever, and you can send different frequencies to the piezo for it to play.
That's pretty cool. Have you heard of any other like typical use cases? Like what are some of the demos that Google gives by default? Like, hey, Android Things is here, like do this.
So there's the one that I really like is a TensorFlow example where it takes, you use a physical button to take a photo using the Raspberry Pi camera, and it uses a local sort of instance of TensorFlow on the app itself and processes the image and then speaks out loud what it sees. So I did a demo of this at a talk I did recently.
Okay.
But this is really, really cool. So basically what it did is it takes a photo of like a dog. I had like a Labrador dog, and then it would say, I see a Labrador dog, or I see a broccoli, or whatever you've got in front of it. It tries to identify and classify and speak it out. And the cool part about this is that it's all running locally on the device. So it's not hitting any of the web services or anything. It's a local TensorFlow model that's been built and packaged with the app.
That's pretty cool. You know, it kind of does make me, I hear you talking about some of these examples of things that you've built and so forth. But as a pure beginner like myself, even though I've played with Raspberry Pi, I really haven't played with Android Things yet. So it kind of makes me wonder if I were approaching this as someone who's listening for the first time and I'm kind of intrigued and this is something I might want to do as a hobby to get into it, where would you recommend would be the best place to start? You know, for example, what board would you recommend? Would you recommend any pieces of hardware? And would you recommend any sample problems to solve, like, you know, check the temperature and it's above 50 degrees, turn a light on or anything like that? Do you have any recommendations for like boards and hardware for things to start with if you're just getting going?
So I would advise the Raspberry Pi just because of its simplicity of being able to flash the new Android Things SDK onto it.
Okay.
So the Raspberry Pi Model 3B Plus, I think it is. But you can buy that probably from a lot more places. And there's also online you can buy like an Android Things kit. So I think Adafruit, or there's a couple of different hardware providers that do offer these kits that you can buy with a whole bunch of different LEDs and resistors and different things for you to play with. You can also get, I think it's called a rainbow hat. I don't even know if I'm saying that right, but basically that sits on top of your Pi, and that gives you like access to a bunch of different sensors and some LEDs. And that's a lot easier to program because you don't have to sort of plug things into a breadboard. You just put that on top of your Pi. Unfortunately, these sort of kits and the Adafruit stuff is not available everywhere. So I wasn't able to get access to a whole kit that's branded Android Things, but you don't need that. You can just use your Raspberry Pi that you have, and you can use components that you would buy for your Arduino prototyping.
Yeah, I think that you brought up the Rainbow Hat, and the fellow Android GDE, Paul Blundell, showed me the Rainbow Hat recently. And that was very interesting. And again, for those that aren't familiar with it, with the Raspberry Pi, you can take what's called hats and set them on top and basically plug them directly into like the Pi. And it offers all different kinds of stuff like buttons and like a little, I think, an LED readout and a temperature sensor, I think, and so forth. So a bunch of different cool things. And like you said, you don't have to spend all that time setting it up and getting it working with the breadboard, et cetera. So it's a quick option. Pay a few extra bucks, but it might make life a little bit easier.
Oh, that all this sounds like pretty interesting. And I would suggest, like, if folks wanted to really, like, you know, dive in and to see like what's involved. Rebecca, maybe you have this in your examples, but you have like a very basic LED one, right? Like, I would probably start there. Like, just say, hey, connect, get this light to like flash, like, you know, repeatedly or something. That's usually
Yeah, that's where everyone starts, and it's a good place to start just to get your head around it. And then just maybe adding a button. Can I control the LED with a button? And then like throw in Firebase while you're at it, might as well.
Yeah.
Try control it via Firebase, or, you know, just play around with it to get to know exactly what's possible.
Now, just to like step back a little and understand the platform in general, right? So I remember when like Google talked about Brillo. There was also that's also probably why they changed the name, because people like me can't like pronounce the name as well. there was this platform called Weave, right? So there was like Brillo and like the companion platform called Weave. Do you know if like Weave still exists? Like, would I use this at all today?
Yes. So Weave does exist, and it is going to be supported soon on the Android Things platform. So currently right now, it's not available, but I believe it is being worked on. And I mean, it will maybe even like tomorrow be launched. Who knows? Maybe right, tomorrow we'll be like, damn it, this podcast is out of date.
Right.
But anyway, so Weave is basically what will be used to manage your devices that are connected to the internet. So right now, as an example, my Firebase electricity monitoring app has no security, which is like a massive problem. Obviously, you don't want to deploy something into the market that anyone can read the data or anyone get that information. So Weave is what's going to sort of solve that problem, where you'll be able to register devices to a certain user, and you can deploy updates through what they'll call the IoT developer console. And here you'll be able to manage your app and the actual SDK of the Android thing, or not the SDK, the platform, the Android Things platform. So it's still in development. And so obviously I haven't worked too much with the Weave stuff, but it is coming soon. So it is something that you should look and be aware of that will be happening.
Okay, so my application for opening my home door and stuff, I should probably not put it on GitHub and like release it outside. That would not be wise.
Not yet. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, you can implement your own sort of Weave service. You don't have to use Weave, but it is an option that will be provided for you. That obviously is going to be a lot easier than going through the whole process of making your own backend to manage
authentication and stuff. Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that you brought this up, that was one of the shortcomings currently, which kind of makes me wonder. This sounds awesome. I'd like, and I'm looking forward to going home and kind of tinkering with a few of my Raspberry Pis and doing something different with them. But it makes me wonder, what are the current pain points that exist when developing with Android Things, if there are any at all?
So I think, the biggest thing for me right now is that it's still in dev preview. Obviously, so you can't really put anything into production. So that's probably the biggest thing right now. Hopefully, maybe by IO it won't be. I don't know. Maybe I'm just putting some pressure on the team there. So the fact that it's in dev preview is obviously a bit of a deterrent for new companies to start trying to actually use it. Mm-hmm. And that Weave is not available. So, I mean, that is obviously the device management, and that's like really the sort of crux of IoT.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that it's not available yet is probably one of the problems right now. And I think also the fact that it's very new. So it's only a few months old. I think it was announced like November or December. And with this obviously comes the fact that there's no not many examples online. So with like the Raspberry Pis and the Arduinos, you can pretty much find a lot of content no matter what you sort of search. But for Android Things, obviously everyone's trying to build up the content now. So there's not that much that's available for you online. And one other thing is that there's no source yet. So it seems a bit closed source for now. I'm not entirely sure if the source will be released. So I think Google still is in discussions with trying to get, like, if they're deciding if they should make it public or not. So, I mean, for now, there's no source. So we can, I guess, assume that there isn't. Yeah, and I think another point is that some of the APIs aren't supported yet. So, for instance, Bluetooth, I don't think is enabled yet. It might be now. It depends how late this podcast goes and the releases. But so some things aren't available. So I think hardware acceleration is disabled for now. Right. But yeah, so some things you might run into that aren't available on the platform that you would hope to be there.
That makes sense. I mean, it comes with the big caveat that this is like all bleeding edge stuff, right?
Yeah.
Which then means things are going to change. So you got to be ready for that.
I mean, that's exactly how I felt when I started doing Android back in 2008. I mean, there was no documentation. Like, there was no libraries. You couldn't get access. You could get access to the source code, but you had no idea how to navigate it. So definitely common bleeding edge types of situations. Yeah.
This makes a lot of sense. And I'm like super inspired now to to actually try this stuff because it's like pretty interesting, right? And I would say if folks have like one of the biggest challenges with these kind of things is just like coming up with like good use cases and examples like Rebecca has, right? So if folks have examples that they want to shoot our way, like go ahead and like send it and we'll try to like share it with everyone else because I think this is like an interesting sort of like frontier, right? Like where we try to bridge hardware and software. And it has been done like in the past, but I feel always like the thing that limits us is like, you know, creativity in terms of like the examples that we come up with. So if folks have ideas like and like, you know, want to like share like some of the cool stuff that they're done, then like, please, like, yeah, go ahead and like share it with us. Rebecca, thank you so much. This is good stuff. I'm extremely inspired to like go and actually try this out in maybe potentially like an upcoming hackathon or something. If folks want to reach out to you and get more of your resources, like, you know, where did they find the stuff that you write? Tell us like where to like reach out to you.
So you can find me on Twitter. My handle is Rigaroo. So RIGGAROO. And you can find my blog as well with the same name, .co.za. So there I put a lot of little tutorials on what I'm tinkering around with. And more recently, it's Android Things-based stuff.
Nice, nice. And if you want to know why she's called Rigaroo, then like you should listen back to that IO episode. She tells us the secret behind her name. And rigaroo.co.za, that's your website?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right, perfect. And Don, where do people find like the stuff that you do and like the crazy gadgets that you have wired up?
The best place to follow me and reach me is at on Twitter at Don Felker. And Kaushik, how do folks reach you regarding all the stuff that you're up to lately?
Kaushik Gopal on Twitter is usually the best way. So that's the easiest way to reach all of us. And Fragmented Cast is our Twitter handle. So folks, like if you want to like send more resources, if you want to like send the cool stuff that you've been up to, or just want to reach out to one of us, then that would be a good place. All right. Thank you so much for listening, folks. And we will catch you in the next episode. Thanks again, Rebecca.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's it for the show, folks. Fragmented is hosted by Don Felker and me, Kaushik Gopal. We edit and produce all the episodes here on Fragmented. Sarah the Amazing Jackson from the Spec Network helps with production assistance and wraps our final mix. Our theme and ad music is by the national recording artist Blueprint from Weightless Recordings. You can find more Fragmented episodes at fragmentedpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode. Thanks again to Gobiton for sponsoring today's show. You know how you always have those 6 devices and the ones that your users constantly use and you always have to keep testing on? Well, you can save up on that money and you don't have to buy any more of those devices because they're probably available on Gobiton. Head on to the link gobiton.com/fragmented. That's Gobiton, Gobiton. and you get a 15-day free trial. So if you want to see if this would work out for you or if your company would actually find it useful, then it's perfect. Head on there and they'll know you came from us. Thanks again to Cobiton for sponsoring today's show.